Hello, this is Ilana Grofstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Supporting Character of the Week podcast. Last week I mentioned that many minor characters in Tanakh play the role of keeping the major character on the proper path, meaning that the major character is doing whatever he or she is doing, and occasionally needs a nudge to keep them in the right direction. A classic example of this is the character of Avigail, who appears for the most part, in Perek Kafei of Shmuel Aleph. Now, in order to understand the character of Avigail, you have to look at her in the context of the relationship that she has, first of all, with her first husband, Naval, and then in the context of the relationship she has with her second husband, David. Now, while this seems to put Avigail at the center of the story, and in a certain sense, she is at the center of that particular event in Perikate. The truth is that the main character of the story is really David. And this is clear from the context of the story in the book of Shmuel Aleph. The story with Avigail is actually a story within the broader story of David fleeing from Shaul, who wants to kill him. And it's also, you know, one story within the series of stories that eventually brings him to the throne. And so that itself puts David at the center of the story. He's the main character. And also the fact that in this story, even within Perikafe, it is David, the character of David, who changes and develops, right? He's the one who learns something in the story. And that also, by a certain definition, makes him the main character. Avigail, however, even if she is a minor character, is a particularly significant minor character in the story and in the life of David in general, because I think you could say with a lot of confidence that if Avigail had not come at this time in the story, that the whole story of David would have come out very, very different in the end. And so Avigail is very, very important to understanding David and how he ended up being who he is. And in order to do that, we have to now look at the relationship she has with these two different men. At the beginning of this story, at the beginning of Perikafe, Avigail and her husband Naval are described right away as an odd couple. Right, in Pasuk Gimel, V'shem ha'ish Naval, V'shem ishto Avigail, V'ha'isha tovat secher v'yifat torah, V'ha'ish kashe v'ram ma'alalim, V'hu kalibi. Even before Avigail interprets the name of Naval in a very negative way, right? She says later on in the story, Naval Shimon Navalaimo Kishmo Kenhu. He's like his name, Naval, disgusting, a scoundrel, right? And one often wonders what kind of mother or father names their child Naval. Probably it didn't mean that. Probably it meant something along the lines of Nevel, a musical instrument, or other similar types of interpretations. But she interprets his name in that way because it's matim for his personality. It fits his personality. But even before she does that, later on in the story, we see his negative qualities here in this pasuk. The Mitzvah David, for example, interprets the words Ish kashev v'rama alalim ke'amit slev u'po'el ra. He was strong-hearted, which in and of itself could be a positive thing, but he did bad things. He was a bad person. On the other hand, Avigail is described as tovat secha v'yifat tor. Right? She was wise, she was smart, and she was beautiful, right? Which is a fairly positive, to say the least, interpretation. Now, the relevance of these particular features of Avigail, that she was both pretty and smart, right, we will discuss later on. But meanwhile, we can just give a somewhat superficial explanation, right, that the story wants to stress that she was good both inside and out, right? As opposed to her husband, who was all bad, right? For example, there's interpretation of the Radak, who likes to interpret when there's a Kri and Chtiv, when there are two different versions of how Pasuk should be, is written or read, he likes to interpret both, right, to explain the pasuk according to both the Kriya and the Chetiv. So on the pasuk where it says about Naval, Vehu Kalibi, that's the Kri, the Chetiv says Vehu Kalibo, which you can read, which can mean, and he is like his heart, right? Most understand Kalibi, meaning from he's from Kalev, but he understands Kalibo, he is like his heart. Kalev being, you know, one of the members of the family in Shevet Yehuda, meaning he was descended from Kalev. But if you want to understand Kalibo, he was like his heart, meaning that as opposed to some people who might be bad inside or good on the outside or vice versa, he was bad all over, right? He did bad things and he was bad inside as well. Now, since there's such a contrast between Avigail and Naval, you might want to ask here, why would such a woman marry a man like that? But the truth is, we don't really have enough information to answer that question. But what you can say is that Avigail apparently was good despite being the wife of Naval, and Naval was bad despite being the husband of Avigail. Right? That much you could say. Now, the nature of the relationship between Avigail and Naval can be understood even further by the conversation between Avigail and the Na'ar, the servant of Naval, when this Na'ar comes to Avigail to tell her that David is coming to kill Naval and his entire household. Right, a little bit of background for those of you who might not have read the story recently. David is situated in the area of Naval, HaKarmeli, right, which is an area south of Hebron, and David asks to have a little bit of help from Naval. Perhaps he can provide him some food and drink for his soldiers. Many interpretations as to why David thought that he should get this from Naval, one being that they're from the same tribe, so Naval should help him out. Others saying that there was some sort of a relationship between David and Naval, that David kind of protected Naval's property while he was hanging out in that area. Be that as it may, whichever way you understand it, Naval is very harsh towards David and refuses to give him anything, and David sees this as an affront and a lack of loyalty or a lack of a recognition of what David has done for him, again, depending on how you understand their relationship, and he's going to kill off Naval and his household. A Na'ar, one of the servants of Naval, hears about this. He comes running to Avigail, right, to tell her that they're in danger. So in Pasuk Yudalad, it says, V'la Avigail eshet Naval higid Na'ar echad mehane'avim lemor, hinei shalach David malachim mehamidar levarech et adoneinu vayat bahem. Right, David sent messengers to Naval, and Naval was very nice to them. V'hanashim tovim lanu me'od, v'lo hichlamnu, v'lo pakanu me'uma, kol yimei hitalachnu itam ve'yuteinu basadeh. Right, these people with David have been very good to us, and there's been no incident between us. Choma hayu aleinu. Right here, this is where the idea that they were protecting them. They were like a wall for us. Gam laila, gam yomam, kol yimei hayotam imam ro'im hatzon. Ve'ata, di'u ri'im ata asi, ki chalta hara el adoneinu va'al kol beito, v'hu ben bli'al midaber elav. Midaber elav. Right, so he says to her, the Na'ar says to Avigail, right, what should we do? Because David's coming, and v'hu ben bli'al midaber elav, right, and he is a scoundrel, right, he's a bad person. There's no point in talking to him. Now, there are some interpretations that say that this is referring to David. There's no talking to David. He's a wild man. He's a nomad of sorts. There's no way that we can just talk him out of this. But most interpretations say that that's a reference to Naval. So we see in these words of his servant, no less, right, somebody who's, who's supposed to serve him, not describe him unpleasantly, both a reference to Naval as a ben Blial, right? There's no point in talking to Naval about this, right, to make him, have him make up with David, to treat him more nicely, because there's no talking to Naval. And also we see the description of, here you have David and his men who were good to Naval's workers, etc., and to Naval himself, and Naval was very unpleasant to them, right? So both of these things we see in the description of the Nar. Now, some Mefarshim say it couldn't be that he was calling Naval a Bleal, because, you know, a servant would never refer to his master in that way, and certainly wouldn't say it to his wife, right? And even the wife, in those days, at least, some Mefarshim say, wouldn't dare speak about her husband in that manner, right? Because it's in the continuation of this conversation where she says, well, actually not to the Nar, but later on to David, but it couldn't be that when she says Naval Shimon Nevalaimo to David, it couldn't be that she was saying such a terrible thing about her husband, because a wife wouldn't dare to do that. It seems to me that that's not what's going on here, but rather that she would say it. And why would she say it? Why would the servant speak about his master in that way? And why would Abigail speak about her husband that way? Because what we have here really is a kind of like known secret, right? Everybody knows that Naval is an unpleasant, unsavory character. And so when the situation is so dangerous, when it's come to a situation of life and death, the Na'ar comes to Abigail and says, I have no choice but to speak to you because I don't know what else to do. And he knows, the Na'ar knows that Abigail will know what to do, because everybody knows that what they're dealing with. Everybody knows that they're dealing with Naval, a person who is of a certain nature, and the Na'ar knows that Abigail will know how to deal with the situation. Right? And he doesn't have to cover it up, because everybody knows that this is the way the Naval is. And so later, when Abigail is speaking to David, and we'll look at that more carefully in a moment, she says, among other things, right, everybody knows that my husband is like that, right? But don't let that allow you to do stupid things, right? Don't go around killing people because I have a husband who just acts that way, right? Don't let his bad qualities force you to do things that you're going to regret later. And she knows this, and she says it openly, right, although obviously behind Naval's back, you know, basically that Naval is not going to change, right? There's no way of getting him to change his mind, and so she, understanding that he's never going to do the right thing, she basically circumvents him. She goes around him in order to prevent the bloodshed that David is going to cause. Now, this kind of helps us understand something which people, you know, often ask in one way or another about this story, right? That later on in the story, David and Abigail get married very quickly after the death of Naval, right? One could raise one's eyebrows over this. And there are even midrashim that suggest that perhaps something improper was done here, that there was even a suggestion of marriage even before Naval died, although the pasuk that is interpreted in order to suggest that doesn't have to be understood in that manner. But if you understand the relationship in this way, one understands why this could have happened, because the relationship between Abigail and Naval was not much to mourn over. There is no communication. When Naval does something wrong, Abigail just kind of like goes around him, and they are clearly so different, as we saw from the beginning of the story, that, you know, perhaps there wasn't much for Abigail to hang on to there, certainly once Naval was gone. The relationship between David and Abigail, however, as we'll see in a moment, was a much more healthy, equal, and dynamic relationship than that which Abigail had with Naval. And one sees this, first and foremost, in the conversation that they have when Abigail is trying to convince David, you know, not to go and kill Naval and all of his household. First of all, most significant is that, as opposed to what she does with Naval, which is basically to avoid him, to go around him, with David, when she wants to speak to him, she very animatedly goes and intentionally goes to meet with him face to face, right? To confront him, right? Not to avoid him. And this is through a deep understanding of his personality as well, right? Just as she understands what her first husband, Naval, is all about, she understands David, and she knows what's going on in his head as well, and she understands that David is a person that she can influence. David is a person who can learn something, who can change, who can understand what she's trying to say. Now, it's possible that she had a double motive here, right? When she stops David's plan to kill everybody in Naval's household, that of course includes her, and the other people in the house, not just Naval himself. There are others who have written about this topic that Nashim Chachamot, wise women in Tanakh, right, are often associated with the prevention of bloodshed. And so it could very well be that was a motive. But nevertheless, even if she was trying to save her own life and the other innocents in the house as well, it's clear from what she says to David that there's more at work here, and that her motivation for stopping David from killing Naval has at least another motivation in addition to preventing her own death and the death of the other people in the household. I will let those who are interested in reading in the Psukim inside, and it's definitely well worth it, but I will basically summarize that what she says to David is the following, right? I recognize that you are Mashiach Hashem. You are the anointed one of God who is going to become the king. And if you now go ahead and kill Naval, right, this will just be a stumbling block for you in the future. This is something that you are going to regret if you spill this blood, certainly the innocent blood in the household, today. And she says, although you are a fighter of God's wars, right? Ki milchamot Hashem Adoni nilcham, right? And spilling blood is an inevitable, unfortunate part of your job description, right? All while it's something which God commands, right? Then it's a necessary evil. Although, as we know from other stories with David, that the shvichut, even in the context of a war, is problematic, right? This is why David is not allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash. But she says it's a necessary evil. But if you start killing people because of your own personal vendettas, and you do it just because you are able to, because you have the power to do so, well, then that's going to cause you serious problems in the future. Now, in order to understand why this is so significant in terms of the story of David and why Avigail's lesson to David here is so significant, I want to look at this story within a broader context in two different ways. Number one is within the immediate broader context. Right, as you know, this is the story in Perek Kaf He, between, obviously, Perek Kaf Dal and Perek Kaf Vav. Now, Perek Kaf Dal and Perek Kaf Vav are very interesting in that they contain within them two stories which are very, very, very similar. In Perek Kaf Dalet, we have the famous story of David hiding from Shaul in one of the caves in En Gedi. David is hiding inside. Shaul and his men are camped outside the cave. And David has an opportunity, when Shaul enters the cave, to take care of his needs, to kill him. But he doesn't. And afterwards, when Shaul is further away, he comes out of the cave and says, "See, I could have killed you, but I didn't. Right? I didn't because you are the anointed king of God, and I don't do that sort of thing." Perek Kaf Vav is a very similar story. There, once again, Shaul and his men are camped out, this time in an encampment out in an open field. They're all asleep. David once again comes along, and he has the opportunity to easily kill Shaul, and he doesn't. Right? It's basically the same idea, the same story. The Chama Leibowitz points out the similarities between these stories, and notes that many people have said, is this really two different stories? They're so similar, how could that be? And she says that the two stories are meant to show a development, a moral development in the character of David, where in the first story, despite the fact that he says he doesn't kill Shaul for ideological pure reasons, it's not so clear that that's the case. Why? Because when David is inside the cave, if he had killed Shaul, right, his men would have eventually figured out that something was up, would have come in to find Shaul dead, right, would have said, okay, since we were encamped right outside the cave, the killer must be somewhere in the cave. And basically David had signed his own death warrant. In other words, he would have been caught and killed, right? So even if maybe he did have pure reason for not killing Shaul, it's also possible, and the Chama Leibowitz hints that perhaps David himself was not sure what his real motive was. It's possible that he didn't kill him because that would have been, you know, poor planning on his part, and it would have gotten himself killed. In Perek Kavaz, however, that element is taken away. They're in an open field. David can kill him, run away, and nobody would have known the difference, right? He could have gotten away with it. And so then, when he doesn't kill Shaul, we know that his motives are pure, right? So going back to Perek Kafhei, right smack in the middle of those two stories, it's very interesting that once again the story is centered on this issue of Shfichut Damim, and specifically Shfichut Damim that was something that David could get away with because he has the power to do so, right? And the Lord comes up, Avigail, and teaches him, if you're going to be the king, if you're going to really, be the leader of Am Yisrael, then you have to understand that you can't do that because that's what's going to mess you up, right? Both for practical reasons, you can't go around doing that, but also for moral reasons. Just because you have the power to kill somebody doesn't mean that you should go killing everybody who stands in your way. Right? And that is the message of Abigail, but it is so clearly connected to the story before and after, right? That one has to understand that Abigail's conversation with David perhaps clarifies in the mind of David the issue that he's perhaps struggling with in Perek Kavdalet, according to Nachum Lewitz's interpretation, so that by the time we get to Perek Kavav, there's no question in David's mind or in the mind of anybody else that he is acting out of pure motive. So we see right away that this issue of David and Shvichut Damim is a much broader issue than just the killing of Abigail's household, right? And so clearly Abigail's role here isn't simply to save her own skin, but also to affect major change in the future king of Am Yisrael. The second context in which it's important to see this story of Abigail is in the context of David's wives, specifically in contrast to a later wife that David takes, that of Bathsheba. Right? If Abigail here stands for everything that is ideological and pure and the prevention of Shvichut Damim, the story of Bathsheba, not Bathsheba herself, who was good, but the story that raged around her, is the exact opposite. There, right, David kind of slips, right, and he forgets basically this message of Abigail, right, that as the king, he has to be very careful about Shvichut Damim, and he has to be very careful what he does for his own personal motives. He takes this woman from another man for himself, basically has him killed. And if there are many interpretations, and we're not going to go into those right now, how you can technically get David out of being technically a murderer and an adulterer in that story. Choose the interpretation if you wish. But clearly what he's doing there lacks moral integrity, and that really becomes a stumbling block, as Abigail says it will later on in the story. Right? And all of the things that happen later on with the rebellion of his sons and sons killing killing siblings, etc. When Avshalom rebels against David later in the story, his rallying cry is that it's not possible to get a fair trial with my father. Right? This is already in the post-Bathsheba situation. Meaning what? A man who himself is guilty of things can no longer be a fair judge. Right? And that's what Abigail was warning against here. If you're going to be the leader, if you're going to be the king, if you're going to be the judge of Am Yisrael, you have to be clean. You have to be able to be in that position. Right? And that's what the story of Abigail stands for. And later on, the story of Bathsheba is where David slips up and he makes these exact mistakes. So once again, we see the centrality of the issue that Abigail teaches David here as being not just about the saving, again, of her little Dalet Amot, but of a very significant lesson that David has to learn before becoming king. And now we can go back for a moment to that description of Abigail at the beginning, right? That she is both Tovat Sechel, right, a wise woman, as well as Yifat Tor. Right? So the Yifat Tor, right, there are certainly many Mifrashim, who go on about her extreme beauty. Now, this is perhaps because most stories where somebody is described as being beautiful, for example, the story of Yosef and Eshet Potiphar, right? The beauty has some significance in the story. So they suggest here that her beauty played a role, meaning she was somehow able to win over David because of her beauty, and that's possible, right? It could be that that was part of it, and she was able to use her beauty for this good purpose. Some of the Midrashim go so far as to say there was something improper going on. Again, it's certainly possible. My personal opinion is that it doesn't seem to fit, because Abigail is such an overwhelmingly positive character that to say that there was something improper going on seems to me to be out of context. And in terms of her wisdom, right, that we've seen throughout our interpretation of the story in general, right? It's her ability to understand people, right? Her ability to understand, first of all, Naval, and then to understand David, to understand what the key to their personality was, that with Naval, that he's never going to change, right? There's no chance of any tshuva going on. He's not going to become a good person suddenly and forgive David, right? She understands she just has to circumvent him. But with David, she understands that he's the kind of person who she can influence, who she can teach, who she can get him to change his ways, right? And she also understands that this issue of shfichut damim is something that is bothersome to David, right, that it's an issue for David, and that it's also key to him having a successful kingship later on. Right? And so this wisdom, this understanding of people, this understanding of how to talk to David to convince him of what he has to do, right, all fits very well in with her being a Tovat Sechel. Right, so here we have, right, once again, a perfect example of a minor character. Right, this is basically all we hear about Abigail, she comes in and she comes out, who steps in at a critical moment to make sure that the main character, David, right, keeps on track, that he doesn't do something irreparably wrong that will, you know, change his destiny forever.